Microphone. All right, we have audio. Welcome back to our second Link track today. This afternoon, we're going to talk about the voice changes in Link Server 2013. If you haven't seen me yet, my name is Andrew Ahrensing. I am a Unified Communications Solution Architect for Microsoft Consulting Services based out of the U.S. And I've typically come by to present on the Link track here as well as in the U.S. for different Exchange and Link sessions and our tech eds, ignites, tech readies, and internal events like that. I keep getting distracted. I don't know if I've made the comment yet. They have the switching ports here. Normally, there's a button you push to switch when your display goes on to go from a demo machine to your laptop, but this one has a throttle. So I don't know. Tomorrow, we're going to have one of the overhead to display like phones and tablets so you can see the mobile device experience from conferencing. So I'll try to use it to show the throttle, but it's kind of fun to have the little throttle here to switch slides. I always get distracted every time we go to start because I pull the throttle button. So we have quite a few slides in this one to go over the voice changes. If you haven't seen this one yet, all of our content in here is still subject to change. This is the latest guidance as of some of this literally as of a couple of days ago, right? But we have not yet released Link 2013 yet, so all information that we're telling you, of course, is subject to change. There's three parts to the voice feature or voice changes session that we're going to go over today. The first one covers the voice changes for Link Online. We'll spend a few minutes talking about what we have for voice matched in directly with Office 365. The second part, we'll talk about hybrid voice, where you can leverage Office 365 as well as some Link infrastructure on-premises. And then the final part of the session will be the voice changes and the feature capabilities in Link Server on-prem. And so we'll walk through the first couple relatively quickly. There's not a lot of depth around the hosted voice and Link Online voice. It's relatively straightforward, actually. I will have a little bit more detail in hybrid, and then quite a bit of detail as we go into the on-prem voice changes. The on-prem one really has changes that make keep incrementing or updating Link Server to be more of a IP telephony solution or an IP PBX platform. So you'll see things such as session management and some more granularity over the mediation server to gateway changes, for example, changes around delegates and delegation, IPv6 support, as well as some of the call authorization procedures that we have. So with that, let's take a look. First of all, as we said, there's the three primary ways to deploy voice with Link Server. We have the choice to do a combination of voice with a user who's hosted only in the cloud, and the only on-premise infrastructure you have is the Link client or a Link IP phone, for example. The second choice, as we mentioned, is hybrid, where you're going to have the signaling path and the actual instant messaging and conferencing capabilities in the cloud, but some voice integration locally to maintain some of your carrier relationships. And then finally, Link Server on-prem, which gives you all the flexibility around a Link and what you'd like to do in terms of capabilities and feature sets. So if we take a look, right, at the capabilities around Link Server, Link Online, hybrid voice, for example, we see quite a bit of variation in terms of functionality and feature sets. And so the story around this is that we'll ship the capabilities in Link Server, and we'll continue to add those capabilities as we're able to add them at scale and at the service level agreements and levels of availability that we target in Office 365. So today, Link Online is relatively limited, right? We don't have the ability to do things like common area phones, PBX interop, enhanced 911, response groups, a lot of the traditional telephony features. The online or the Office 365 experience for Link today is really targeted for a user who needs a phone experience or essentially more than instant messaging and conferencing, and they want to be able to do basic dial-in, dial-out capabilities. You'll be able to apply some policies around that, right? But at the end of the day, things such as private line and the other feature sets you have here really aren't available unless you deploy some Link infrastructure on-premises. Over time, of course, we'll continue to add capabilities and features to that online component. But for Link 2013 today, the online capabilities is really focused on that desktop user, right, who has a phone and doesn't use the enhanced or robust feature sets around that, such as response groups or call center type functionality. Hybrid offers some more choices, right? So with hybrid, we're now taking the concept of a user being homed on Office 365, but leveraging some on-premises infrastructure to enable them to achieve the different feature sets that we see missing in that pure online experience. So here we've got a subset of the capabilities are in the cloud, a subset of those are on-prem, and you kind of are able to achieve the best of both potentially, right, by having both a cloud experience and an online experience for your end users. The final one then, of course, is Link Server on-prem. With Link Server on-prem, everything is unlocked, right? You have all the capabilities that we'll walk through and talk about from the Link Server perspective. So the first one, right, concept of Office 365 and Link to Phone, we've mentioned it. Essentially, you can take a Link-style Aries phone, you can plug it into your network or into the internet, and that user's phone number will register. They'll be able to place inbound and outbound calls. That number, right, will reach across all of their Link devices, so whether they have a laptop or a tablet or a voice over IP phone, one of the Aries style voice over IP phone, that number will ring at any endpoint that's registered and logged in. Whichever one they take the call on or pick up will answer the call and will be able to take that. How does that work? Today we only have one kind of bridge between Office 365 and the PSTN world. It's from a partner called Jaja. We have several other partners who are going through the certification process to provide this. And so so in a way, you could say one of the limiting factors of the Office 365 experience is you lose that existing relationship you may have with your incumbent telecommunications provider. You'll also receive, for example, a separate billing statement from the Office 365 partner providing the phone experience. If we were to bill you for the telecommunications service, Office 365 would become a telco, and as a telco, we would be subject to a completely different set of regulations than we would as a software company or as a hosted data center type service. And so the goal with Office 365 and voice, right, is to always have this bridge where you will have a relationship with the telco provider, they will be the telecommunications billing provider, but will be able to leverage the Link investment so you can take your devices, plug them in, and have that basic voice experience. In terms of signaling and call flow, users will sign in on those devices, right? Whether that be a computer, a laptop, mobile device, or a voice over IP phone. Signaling will flow off to Link Online, but the same media path, which would occur in a traditional Link deployment, which is the most direct path available. So if the two devices are on the same network or they're not blocked by a firewall, you will see the media path going direct between the two devices. If the devices are on different networks or have firewalls, et cetera, between them, you will see the media either flowing via NAT or bouncing off of one of the edge servers in Office 365. So media paths will stay local, signaling will flow through online, billing and chargebacks will come through a partner of Office 365. Today, the certified one is a company called Jaja. In terms of incoming call flow, same process. Some user dials a Link Online user. That number is registered to Jaja, right? Jaja will flow the call into Office 365. We will look for an available Link endpoint to ring the call. We will send the signaling down. But the process in terms of media flow is similar to what we call media bypass. Media will flow directly from one of those PSTN carrier providers to that endpoint itself, the goal of not having to flow through any of the Link Online service. For voicemail, same process, user calls in. If Office 365 determines that the user does not have any endpoints logged on or the timeout period expires after a certain number of rings, we will ring exchange voicemail. That could be an exchange online, for example. Media then will flow from the carrier directly into the exchange UM server, and the user will get a voicemail. The difference in terms of media flow into the service comes with conferencing. With conferencing, we're leveraging the MCUs available in Office 365. As a result, conferencing call flow and the media for conferencing will flow directly into Link Online. So, in terms of devices, we support all of the Aries-style devices for Link Online. We're actually rebranding the devices so that they don't say Link 2010 anymore on the device. They will just say Link devices. The goal will be that anyone who's invested in the Aerie-style phones over the last couple of years will get a revised software image. That image will allow them to attach to a Link server on-prem, Link server hybrid, or Link server online in terms of a registration process. They'll still see the same Link interface in terms of being able to see their calendar, have Exchange integration, place and receive calls, right, see their dial history, and other capabilities. For Link Online, we do have the restrictions, right, so no common area phones, for example, and some of the other advanced calling features. For device updates, we'll also run a device update server in Office 365, so once you attach the devices, you do not need to manage or run any device update software in order to bring those devices up to the latest firmware as provided by Microsoft. Provisioning them, as we mentioned, this will flow through one of the partners. Today, the only partner providing this concept of provisioning is from Jaja. Once you provision a user for Link Online and check the box to enable voice, we will flow through their work number and create the SIP URI automatically. So you'll have the chance to override if you want during the provisioning. If we take a look, right, as you go through the provisioning process, you'll select a provider in a region that you want to enable for Link Online. You go through, define the phone numbers you want for the users. The partner will have provided you a list of phone numbers when you signed up for the service. You'll either port those numbers from your existing environment or get net new numbers depending on how you deploy. And as a result, then assign the numbers using this process. Users then sign in and register using their phone number and PIN, for example, or their extension and PIN, and they're able to register their device off into the service and have a functioning phone without any on-premise software. So Link Online, kind of summary, is that you have a restricted set of calling capabilities, but no deployment of software or services on-premises. The caveat is that you must go through a partner for that billing process and the integration part to the PSTN, but we abstract that behind the web page for you. Very simple to provision users. It becomes relatively straightforward then to enable a subsidiary or a remote office and bring them up and Link Online relatively quickly. The second scenario we'll go over is hybrid Link or hybrid voice. In this scenario, essentially we're going to talk about the capability of having some on-premises infrastructure. We understand that a lot of customers are looking at this concept of cloud and saying, whoa, if one of the steps is I have to give up my maybe a multi-year contract with my existing carrier where I've negotiated some benefits or cost advantages in terms of calling rates, and I've got existing phone numbers that maybe I cannot port or I want to keep or maintain, we have an option for that solution as well. That option essentially calls out placing some on-premises Link infrastructure. Once there, we're then able to have the users register to their IM and conferencing capabilities in the cloud, but have the voice capabilities flow through your existing environment and your existing networks. So if we take a look, we have a user here, right, registering as Link Online, but that user is marked for hybrid voice. So once they're marked for hybrid voice, signaling will flow to Office 365. We see that the user is actually registered as a hybrid user. We will then flow that signaling back to your Link server on-premises, which then knows to route that call to your existing gateway, IP PBX, IPT, could be a SIP trunk to one of your providers, right? Whatever that existing, current, or traditional method of integrating with the PSTN. So in the hybrid voice scenario, you still maintain a carrier relationship with one of your carriers or PSTN providers. You have a Link server, could be standard edition, enterprise edition. It's not required to be either. As long as you have a Link server pool on your premises, we can then have that signaling path flow through. That pool will also include the mediation server component if your IP PBX or IPT or SIP trunk provider is not able to do media bypass, for example. So taking a look at what's required, right? We need a Link pool on premises. If we want the users to be able to access voice services from the outside or from the internet or untrusted networks, we'll need an edge server in that environment. We do have a mediation server that gets installed, co-located with our Link Server 2013 front-end pools. That mediation server can handle scenarios where we can't do media bypass and have media go directly from the phone endpoint to that IPT or SIP trunk or SBC or other gateway off to the PSTN. In terms of the PSTN infrastructure, it's what you have today, right? So if you have a supported gateway, an IP PBX, SBC, SIP trunk, etc. We're able to leverage that existing PSTN infrastructure and use that as the gateway between Link Online and your phone infrastructure that you've got deployed on-premises. Looking at that, right, so we have a Link Online user. Link Online user boots up on your network, does a DNS query, gets the SRV records back for your on-premises pool, goes to sign into the pool. Pool knows, this is a hybrid user. I'm going to redirect you to Link Online. User goes out, registers to Link Online, has their presence capabilities, is able to sign into the client. Once that user has an incoming PSTN call, right, a call will come inbound from the PSTN. Call will hit your SBC, IP PBX, IPT gateway solution. It knows that the next hop for that call is the mediation server for Link. So it sends a signaling off to your Link 2013 front-end pool. Link knows, this is actually a hybrid user. Let me send the signaling off to the cloud. Cloud gets a signaling, says, let me find all the endpoints registered for that user point. Whichever endpoint the user picks up on, we will then try to establish that media path directly from your PSTN infrastructure to that end or to that endpoint that the user has answered the call. So relatively straightforward call path. We make a little stop on premises. It determines you're in the cloud, sends signaling to the cloud. But again, the media path will stay local for that process. Similar process for outbound calls. User is already registered to the cloud. They signed in. Signaling goes out to the cloud, says, this is a hybrid user. Let me redirect to the on-premises infrastructure. Send signaling off to the PSTN gateway, IP PBX, et cetera. Media path is then established using either media bypass directly to that IP PBX. If we don't support media bypass for that environment, we'll send the media down to the front-end mediation server, and then media off to the PSTN PBX. So looking at that, right, inbound and outbound call flow becomes a lot more of what we're accustomed to today. We still have the same carrier relationships. We still have the same infrastructure between our on-premises network and the PSTN. And we're able to leverage a signaling path that hops through the cloud, but a media path that will stay local inside of our environment. So in terms of voice configuration, right, hybrid is all managed through Link's server control panel and Link PowerShell, same interface and same command structure you're used to today. And the user configuration, same process. Check a box to mark a user for hybrid voice. We now know that the voice capabilities will be provided by a Link server deployment on premises itself. So with that, let's hop over then to the main content, which is the additional changes around voice capabilities for Link Server 2013 on-premises. So the first one is that we've seen customers continue to adopt and grow their deployments of Link over time, over the past several years, at a pretty rapid pace. A lot of customers that are deploying Link today are ones that deployed LCS or OCS for instant messaging and presence. They started to add conferencing over the last maybe 4 to 5 years, typically starting on live meeting, moving that onto a Link-style conferencing environment, probably adding dial-in audio conferencing at some point in the past, getting to the Link client and having that sort of single interface for instant messaging and conferencing. And then for a subset of their user population, have started to experiment with what we call enterprise voice, or essentially the capability to use Link as that user's primary phone system. In the last couple of years, since we've shipped Link 2010, we've seen an even further adoption of that, where we've seen organizations move all the way to removing their existing PBX environment or on-premises phone systems and replacing it completely with Link combination of soft phones and hard phones and a Link server infrastructure in some of their core data centers. The issues around that, or what we found preventing some of the organizations from moving all the way, have to do with some of the advanced voice capabilities inside of Link that they see in their existing PBX or call center type environments. Some of those are around resiliency and providing the ability to keep voice services alive at a remote destination in the case of a WAN outage. When we look at centralizing devices and or features across a WAN, we introduce a a single point of failure in that WAN environment. In Link 2010, we've introduced the survivable branch appliance concept to enable a low-cost device to basically manage that signaling and voice integration with the PSTN at a remote location, and so that in the case of a WAN outage, those devices will still register. They can still place inbound and receive, place outbound and receive inbound phone calls, and they're able to continue on in the case of that WAN outage. That capability has been enhanced and continues on in Link Server 2013. We still have the concept of that survivable branch appliance. We'll show you some of the interop scenarios for SBAs a little bit later. The other one is around interoperability. In the past, Link Server 2010 and prior has always been a destination. It's never been an intersection for voice traffic. And so by destination and intersection, we're referring to session management, or the ability essentially to monitor and place policies and route voice traffic inside of the organization. With Link Server 2013, we're adding basic session management capabilities, so now Link can move farther upstream inside of an organization. Typically, where we see something like this occur is in an organization that has some TDM-style PBXs, but really wants to move towards something like SIP trunking to achieve some cost efficiencies at the PSTN interaction layer. With session management, you can put an IP telephony solution directly attached to that carrier, or that PSTN connection, but still have a gateway on premises that allows you to flow certain calls through to people who are on those legacy or traditional TDM PBXs. Finally, there's been some challenges around Link 2010 and the capabilities around things like delegates and call authorization and handling. We've made some changes in Link 2013 we'll talk a little more about to help unblock some of these capabilities or features and continue to drive Link towards a full capability IP telephony solution or IP PBX that you can leverage. So with Link Server, our capability for registration, placing inbound and outbound calls is relatively straightforward. We're not going to re-show you the architecture deck that we walked through or kind of the overall slides, but in general, you'll have a pool or multiple pools deployed in your environment. Users will register to that pool internally. If you have the edge server deployed in your perimeter, users can also register to that pool from the outside without requiring a VPN connection. That Link server will have some sort of attachment to the PSTN. That attachment can be a direct SIP trunk, for example, flowing through a session border controller or SBC. That attachment could be a traditional gateway that has a PRI or ISDN type connections or interface to enable some circuits or TDM circuits from a IP PBX or directly from the PSTN to be transcoded or translated into voice over IP and flow over Ethernet onto the Link side. That connection could also be an existing IP telephony solution that has the capability to send SIP and media flow and is certified to interoperate or work with Link Server 2013. So regardless of what the PSTN interop story is, we support all of the major methods of integrating with a PSTN or PBX. That will be the bridge between your voice over IP deployment on the Link server side and the users on the PSTN coming in via a home phone, cell phone, another organization's PBX, for example. The enhancements to voice are kind of summarized on this slide. Some areas are around routing itself. We talked about the capability for session management. We'll also talk a little bit more about the capability around managing the number of trunks and the trunk configuration between what we call a Link mediation server and between the actual PSTN gateway, right? Whether that's a gateway, IPT, session border controller, et cetera. Being able to have some variety or additional configuration and additional trunks between there allows us a lot more flexibility in our voice policy and voice authorizations. The other piece that's changed is calling number translation. So we used to have called number translation, so we could send outbound the we could manipulate the digits one way. We're now able to manipulate the digits both inbound and outbound in a Link server conversation with that PSTN. Sometimes we need to do things anywhere from, you know, strip the plus, for example. We might have to add some specific country codes or prefixes for outbound calls to a specific PSTN or gateway provider. And so Link now has the capability to modify not just the called number, but also the calling number as it goes out of Link towards that other endpoint, whether that be directly to the PSTN or through some sort of gateway to get there. We've got additional reporting information that's being specified by the mediation server. This will enhance the quality of our call detail records or CDR records that are stored in the monitoring database. If you missed the earlier sessions, we also no longer have a dedicated monitoring server role. We've moved that monitoring server role into a service that runs on the front-end server. So again, part of our story of reducing or consolidating the number of servers that you'll have to deploy. We actually have been quite surprised. We've been positioning Link as a communications platform and not as a call center platform. We still see call centers as having some very specific requirements around things like manager barge-in and some of the reporting and statistical capabilities of looking at agents and groupings. But we have kind of a slight capability in Link in something we call response groups. And response groups essentially allow you to have workflows and call trees established so you can have users press 1, 2, 3, 4, use their voice to say operations, accounting, billing, and be directed to a pool of agents who are signed into their devices to go ahead and answer that call and place the call. We expected response groups to be used relatively small or moderately in most organizations, but we found that organizations that deploy Link end up deploying literally thousands of these response groups. The rationale, I guess, behind it is there's no extra cost, right? Once you're licensed for Link, you have the response group capabilities. As you deploy Link users to enterprise voice, it becomes very straightforward to deploy these workflows and capabilities around that. It doesn't have the capabilities you'll see in a true call center solution, but it also comes with the price tag of you have the licensing for Link. And so what we found is a lot of requests for feature enhancements around the response group service and response group capabilities, specifically the one to delegate out the management of the response group hierarchy. With Link Server 2010, if you wanted to create response groups, you're calling the Link administrator. That person can then create some workflows, some agents, some agent groups, assign the relevant structure around those, and then pass that information back off to the person who requested it. With the ability to delegate this out, we can now delegate response group managers, and these response group managers can then create their own workflows, agent groups, and agents, and have that management flow back or be managed by the business itself versus coming back to IT. In terms of restrictions, we've also applied some modifications around our policies, authorization, and routing. That ensures that we have some more capabilities for things such as SIMO-ring and call forwarding, for example, as to which specific numbers those actions can entail. So does my numbers that I'm allowed to call in general, are all of those numbers allowed to be SIMO-ring and call forwarding, or is it a subset or a different range than the ones that I have for direct dialing capabilities? And the final ones, we mentioned in the architecture session a lot about this, the concept around high availability and site resilience in Link. We've done a lot of effort to kind of harmonize Link and Exchange and have this concept of bricks, right? We want the capability to have lots of modular servers, each doing the same basic workloads, with the expectation that at any point in time, one of those is going to fail, have problems, be down for patching, have a hardware issue, right? But the service itself stays completely operational. And so the HA and site resilience story in Link is also enhanced. We used to have some capabilities just around the voice workload. Now we've added in the capability to have that failover for instant messaging and the conferencing workloads as well. So let's go into a little bit more detail then on these advanced voice changes. The first one is around the delegates and call routing. With Link Server 2010 and prior, if I had a delegate, that delegate might have had SIMO-ring enabled, but when a call came in from my manager, my boss, it would not SIMO-ring my cell phone. So if I had to take my boss's calls, I had to be pinned to my desk or someplace with a Link endpoint. The assumption here was that if a person's calling for the manager and the receptionist has stepped away, we don't want that call going to the receptionist's voicemail, right, on her cell phone, because she walked into an area where her cell phone went out of coverage, her battery died or something like that. And so I call, you know, as Lohit called my manager, he's expecting to get the manager's voicemail, not the, you know, the administrative assistant's voicemail, who's the delegate for that person. So with Link 2013, what we kept hearing is, well, with this restriction on delegate call routing, you're forcing the delegates to be at the desk all the time. If they want to step away for any particular reason, they don't have the capability to simul-ring or have that call go to a another Link extension inside, a PBX extension inside, or the person's cell phone. We now have the capability to allow or enable that simul-ring and call forwarding experience, not just at the manager level, but also at the delegate level. And the way we achieve that is we put in what we call a too-soon timer. If we notice that one of the call legs that's being forked picks up much too quickly, and this is a configurable parameter, we will then block or not use that as the call answering leg. The assumption there is that the receptionist has set simul-ring. Simul-ring is going to her cell phone or another phone, and that phone is out of coverage or is going to voicemail too rapidly. So even if that phone goes to voicemail, that call will still continue to ring at the manager's desk and will go to the manager's voicemail, which is where you would expect the call to end up or to reside in a normal relationship. We continue to support the many-to-many manager-to-delegate relationships. We understand that it's not common anymore to have a single administrative assistant with a single manager. Usually there's kind of a pool of bosses and sometimes even a pool of administrative assistants that are managing the, or are providing the call answering capabilities for that entire pool. So that end-to-end delegate relationship is still maintained. The change from Link 2010 is that now in 2013 you have this too-soon timer and the capability for receptionists or admin assistants to have that call forwarding and simul-ring capability. The other one, or one of the, I guess one of the bigger missing features, right, to position Link closer upstream to that PSTN source in the organization, is the concept of session management. So session management is where we have call routing coming in from one source. That source could be the PSTN, could be a PBX, but some other back-end platform, flowing through Link and being routed not to a Link endpoint, but to another PBX or maybe out to the PSTN, for example. And so now Link is not just, as we say, a destination for calls, right? But it becomes an, the capability comes up of it being an intersection. Calls can flow into Link. That call may ring a Link phone number. It may also flow right through Link and go off to another platform, such as an IPT or IPPBX or TDMPBX that exists inside of the environment. This capability didn't exist prior, but allows us to kind of unblock some of these deployment scenarios where session management was required. Session management has been kind of a big buzzword. It's been something that's been handled traditionally by the TDM side of the house, but a lot of the IPT or IP telephony providers are now have added or are in the process of adding the concept of session management to their IPT stories. The benefit or the plus side to this is that the session management capabilities in Link is all still managed by the same PowerShell and Link Server Control Panel interface that you're familiar with today. So same concepts apply. It becomes very simple to configure these trunks out to the different gateways or IPPBXs, for example. Once we have these trunks configured, we can apply the specific routing and policy information that we want to in terms of authorization, call detail records, any sort of reporting that must go along with those trunk lines themselves. And as we point out, right, the flexibility really unblocks a lot of call paths that we didn't have capable in existing versions of Link. Now we can have calls from incoming from the PSTN to a PBX, but through Link. We can have a call from a PBX that's outbound, either to a Link user or to a PSTN user, again, flowing via the Link software running on your network or on-premises. So if we take a look at session management, right, in terms of signaling and call flow, it's going to look very similar to what you'd probably expect. In this case, we've got Link itself serving as a session manager between two different IP PBXs in the organization. Signaling will flow through Link. Media will attempt to route that media from endpoint to endpoint, right? Goal will be to reduce the amount of media flowing through link whenever possible, to reduce the load on our internal server resources. The routing and authorization process you would define in Link Server Control Panel and define which IP PBX is allowed to call which IP PBX. In terms of caveats, some of the session management third-party session management services out there will allow you to provide session management down to the endpoint level. So certain extensions are allowed to use trunk A, other extensions are not allowed to use trunk A. We don't have that capability in Link. At Link, it's phone calls coming in from IP PBX on the left. If they're an endpoint on that IP PBX and we have a trunk to it, all of those endpoints will be allowed through that Link trunk through the other side to the other other endpoint. Another sample, right, or another common scenario for session management would be you have a TDM or IP PBX. You want to use Link as the endpoint for a SIP trunk, for example. Now we can have that PSTN connection flow first to Link and then have the call flow and call authorization flow to those internal PBX users. The next change or capability in Link 2013 is something we call flexible trunking. And so flexible trunking is really kind of a continual or iterative improvement, as you can see, on the capabilities between a link mediation server and that next hop. We're using that next hop in this scenario as a gateway. Could be a session border controller, could be a IPT or IP PBX, for example. With OCS 2007, we had a one-to-one relationship. So if we had one gateway, we had one mediation server, they were paired. Our routing and link routed to the mediation server because there was only one gateway associated. That was the next hop. Mediation server took care of it. Out went the call. With Link 2010, we wanted to give you some more flexibility for outbound calling and outbound routing. And so we allow a single mediation server to have more than one IPT or gateway or next hop available to it. And we defined our call authorization and routing to follow that trunk that was going to, or to the gateway itself versus to the mediation server. And so now we had more granular control in terms of call flow and call flow logic to determine which gateway a specific call would flow to. But what we didn't have in Link 2010 was the inverse of that. So with Link 2013, we now allow the one-to-many from a mediation server to the next hop relationship to be defined. But we also allow a one-to-many relationship from that next hop back into the link environment. So if we have an IP PBX or a gateway, for example, we can define multiple trunks from that IP PBX or gateway into the link environment with different authorization or call handling capabilities on a trunk basis versus at a mediation server or gateway basis. We still will leverage TLS and secure RTP for the signaling and call flow across all of these. But this concept of moving to a many-to-many approach between the mediation servers and gateways gives us much more flexibility in the call routing and call logic capabilities. So essentially, right, Link now has the concept of trunks. We used to define routes that would terminate on a mediation server. Then we defined routes that would terminate on a gateway. Now we define routes that will terminate on a trunk itself. And as we can have multiple trunks, that gives us additional flexibility in terms of our call handling for inbound and outbound calls. This provides also additional resiliency. When we have inbound calls from that IP PBX or gateway, if one of our internal mediation servers is down, that IP PBX or gateway can route to an additional mediation server inside to ensure that the call flow inbound to link will continue to be operational. So this gives us additional flexibility, or essentially mesh networking capability, for that inbound and for the inbound call flow, as we had that mesh capability for outbound call flow with Link Server 2010. For IP PBXs and trunks, we can define those between the mediation server, right, and that IP PBX inside of the organization. In terms of our configuration, we can either scope that globally for all the trunks from that mediation server to gateway, or we can define a different configuration per trunk. And you can see this inside a link control panel or PowerShell as you're looking at the trunk configuration. for dial plans and for authorization or for call routing, right, we now have that capability to scope it to a specific trunk. That will ensure that we can do routing to a specific gateway or a specific set of gateways, for example, for a subset of users that have a higher priority or that are allowed to make certain calls in the organization versus the other users who are scoped to different trunks, which either hit different gateways or different ports on gateways, which have a different set of call logic or call handling around those. In terms of resilience, we only need a single mediation server listening port, even if we have multiple gateways associated with that. We don't require multiple listening ports, but there are certain IP PBXs that do require multiple listening ports. You'll have the capability in Topology Builder to define those additional ports if required, for example, as some of the IP PBXs out there, if there's multiple trunks, they want a separate port on the link side for each one of the inbound trunks. The other piece that we mentioned is that this trunk capability enhanced the actual reliability of the service itself. We had some scenarios in Link 2010 and OCS 2007 R2 where a route would be marked as down because the gateway was down. With this concept, we're only marking that down on a per trunk level. So we can have a mediation server that has a specific gateway, has trunks, maybe three different gateways. If one of those gateways fails, we know that the other two trunks are valid and will allow those trunks to stay up for the outbound routing component. Mediation servers checking that next hop, right? We have some options requests going through there. We continuously pull the next hop gateways or IP PBXs to ensure that those are up and valid. We're not waiting for a call to come into the mediation server to find out that the next hop is invalid. We want outbound routing to know at the time it's making the outbound routing decision that a specific gateway or a specific trunk is no longer in service. And so we've also started working with all of our third-party partners and hardware vendors to say, expect the fact that we'll be doing this polling on a regular basis because that's some additional load, essentially, that you'll see on your devices. That should not be interpreted as a denial of service or something that will be tar-pitted, for example, on the remote side. So outbound routing, a couple changes around that as well. The first one there is that if there are multiple trunks available to outbound routing, we will continue or retry that next trunk as long as there's no timely, 180 completion was successful, received back to outbound routing. The second one is when a mediation server pool comes back up, we do signal back to outbound routing rapidly that pool or that set of trunks becomes available again so that re-enters the outbound routing logic to ensure that the reduces the time from when we've recovered service to when that the trunk and the path to that gateway is available again from the outbound routing component. The note there, right, is that even though the mediation server may respond with the 500, it's not going to result with outbound routing marking it as back in service. That's just acknowledging that the mediation server component is still alive and well. So we understand in outbound routing the difference between a response from the mediation server signaling that itself is healthy versus the mediation server signaling that a specific trunk or a specific gateway endpoint is down or not available. We also mentioned the capability around calling number translation. And so calling number translation says that I've dialed a certain phone number. We already, of course, have the capability to modify the number that I've dialed as that dialed number flows out of link to that next hop. In certain scenarios, right, I might have dialed the fully qualified E.164 phone number for a particular user, or Link has normalized the number I've dialed to E.164, but the gateway in that region is not expecting E.164, it's expecting a locally dialed number. With Link 2010 and prior, right, we could modify in the outbound dialed number to be the format that the gateway expected. What we didn't have is the capability for my phone number to be reflected or modified as it exited Link. We would always try to send out the person who was calling that specific number to that next hop gateway or next hop device. that had some potential issues, essentially, right? Some in some cases around call forwarding or simultaneous ring, it wasn't actually the last contact point, but there was another source person who originally dialed that number. And so we've added some changes essentially to address that scenario. What we found is there are some carriers, for example, that won't take a number outbound like that unless they have that context of the original person who dialed the number for that chargeback or billing purposes that may have been required. So taking a look at this, right, here we have a Link user calling out to the PSTN. The first thing that happens is they'll go through their voice policy. Their voice policy in this case is Redmond. And so we have a set of translation rules that will apply for users in that Redmond policy. In this case, the called number is going to, the plus is going to be replaced, for example, right, with a 011. As it hits the PSTN usage, here's where we find that that number is authorized to be dialed. And so the calling number, in this case, will remove the plus. And that second blue box, right, is the difference that we see in Link 2013. So once we've modified both the called number and the calling number, we'll then submit that off to outbound routing. It will look for the appropriate outbound route to route the number to, and then route that call via that appropriate trunk to the next hop, gateway, IPPBX, et cetera, SIP trunk, as that call flows out to the PSTN. Here's an example where we're doing the same calling number translation, except that the original number was coming from a TDM phone attached to a PBX, right? Or maybe an IP phone attached to an IPPBX, and flowing through Link in terms of session management. So number comes into the IPPBX. IPPBX knows that the next hop is going to be the Link mediation server. We see that call coming in on an inbound trunk. We can apply the called number translation, pattern matching and digit manipulation on the inbound trunk. So we're able to modify the outbound number. Once we hit the PSTN usage, we then realize that that's coming from the Redmond PBX, and therefore we need to do a calling number translation as well. So in that case, we'll modify the number coming in from the PBX to be the format that our gateway or carrier expects when we send that number outside of the organization. For example, the IPPBX may have sent only over a five-digit extension, and the PSTN provider is not expecting a five-digit extension as the calling number, right? So we might need to change that off to E.164, for example, before we submit that out externally. Finally, there's some additional information around reporting. This is the information we're talking about in the call forwarding or simulring scenarios where a call has routed through potentially multiple phone platforms or even countries, for example, internally before that number is about to be forwarded back outside. Most carriers require that original calling party, the calling party, right, to have that information as that call ingresses to the PSTN side. We achieve that with the concept of now publishing at the mediation server level, or giving you the option to publish, I say, the P-asserted identity referred by in the history info in the SIP options message. This ensures that when that call is received by a carrier who requires that level of information, that they will accept the call inbound to their network. We had quite a few escalations on this one over the past couple of years as different organizations around the world deployed Link and then tried to integrate with a SIP trunk to their local carrier, for example. Essentially, this will allow you to enable and disable forwarding and kind of controls the capability of an outside user to call in, right, and have that call be forwarded back out over the internet to a number, or not over the internet, over the PSTN to a number that they were looking for. We mentioned earlier the concept of the response group manager. So now we have this response group manager role inside of RBAC. It's a new role in terms of Link 2013. We've got some specifics there you're welcome to kind of catch up on. But essentially, they're able to manage the workflow, agent groups, holidays, right, working hours, et cetera, things that you would typically expect for a small grouping of people who have a workflow or automatic call distribution type experience inside of the organization. We have essentially then, with this introduction of that manager role for response groups, two different types of response groups that can be created. And the way they're called is managed and unmanaged. Another way to look at that is managed means that it's been delegated out. Unmanaged means it's managed by the Link administrator, right? It's unmanaged doesn't mean it's not floating in the ether somewhere. So managed is a subset of the overall capabilities. And if we look at this, we kind of see what's actually happening there, right? A managed response group is going to be someone that's delegated out to manage everything in one of the light blue boxes. So they're able to identify or create the workflow. The workflow is going to have those business hours, holidays, greetings, right? The levels of trees that the person's going to go through in the ACD setup. They're going to be able to specify and create the queues that are associated with the endpoints in that ACD, and then they're able to identify or create these groupings of agents that are able to sign in and take calls as part of that workflow. So in this case, the manager one, right, is able to manage everything associated with workflow one on your left. Manager two is able to manage the workflow, the queues, and the agent groups for the workflow on the right. But manager two cannot see any of the agent groups for manager one. Manager one cannot see any of the workflow queues or agent groups for workflow number two over there. So essentially, when we delegate it out, that manager has full autonomy for their workflow or set of workflows, but they do not have access to other response groups that may be inside of the organization that have their own workflows, agent groups, and groupings. This is different from the ones that we call unmanaged, right? Unmanaged are the ones being managed by the link administrator. Those are the ones at the dark blue background. The link administrator is still able to say workflow one can pull from Q2, can pull from agent group one. The link administrator has full autonomy over all of the response groups, essentially, that are in the unmanaged category or are not managed by one of the delegated response group administrators. Finally, we mentioned there were some changes around call authorization and restrictions. The specific one here is the capability to restrict, essentially, the call patterns when setting up call forwarding or simultaneous ring. With Link today, you're able to do a simul ring or call forwarding for any of the numbers that you might be dialing. We treat that as the same, essentially, from a Link perspective. But with Link Server 2013, we will note that the call action is a call forward or a simul ring. And when that occurs, we will pass it to a different PSTN usage type. So right now here, for example, I'm a member of the Redmond voice policy. Normally, if I make a call, I would have access to the PSTN usages, local and international. However, if I turn on call forwarding and simul ring, that call goes to a different set of policies, which is, oh, I'm in the Redmond voice policy, but when I do call forwarding or simul ring, I only get internal voice policy or custom usages, right? Essentially, we've removed the international dialing capability for forwarding and simul ring. We found this to be a request from a lot of organizations that even though users may be allowed to dial a certain set of numbers, the numbers that they want the user to do for simul ring and call forwarding should be a subset of that overall number that they may have dialing capabilities for. So essentially, this allows you to restrict or manage the call forwarding and simul ring capabilities. Typically, it's something that you want to enable in their local area or local dialing habits. So with that, I think we're going to finish up on time for one of the first sessions. That's the quick overview of voice routing and voice changes. And I wanted to make sure I had at least 5 or 10 minutes on this one left for questions, because I know we covered a lot of voice content, and there's probably some Link folks out there that have other questions on the voice policies or voice capabilities. So we'll open it up for questions. I didn't put you all to sleep. I know it's the session after lunch, and it's a lot of slides and not a lot of demo for voice routing. One up midway back. Yeah, so the question is, when we have the capability at Link Server to modify the calling number, right, does that mean that essentially a Link administrator could define or create the spoofing capabilities, right? So number that was dialed was +1 212 555 1212. Number that was submitted to the PSTN was, you know, +425 538 0613, for example. The administrator would have that capability, but it's up to your carrier then to say, are you allowed to place a call for plus one? Typically, they will not accept a number where the calling number is different from the number range that's been assigned to your organization. So you might be able to send it to your gateway or next hop address, but that next hop is usually the one preventing that calling number manipulation from taking place. You're welcome. Yes? We still don't. So if you're pure off, so if you're pure online, call a private number is one of. If I scroll back in the session, I didn't read through all the table. Private line is not one of the capabilities in the pure online. Private number would be hybrid. So hybrid is the one where if you don't have it in link online, you need either hybrid or on-prem, which gives you the link server on-prem, which gives you then all the voice capabilities that we were kind of walking through just now. Yeah, so the question is, how do you go through and compare hybrid voice versus true on-prem? That's a great question. The Microsoft philosophy has been trying to build as much cloud-ready services. We've seen a lot of demand for organizations that will say, I don't want to run on-premise infrastructure. I just want someone else to do mail or IM or conferencing or some subset of the IT functionality. That's worked very well for us in aspects like mail or SharePoint and things. Voice represents kind of a unique aspect to that. The primary one is that when you outsource your voice platform, you are essentially becoming a the outsourcer is essentially becoming a telecommunications provider. So we've had some regulatory constraints around what we can do and can't do around unified billing, giving voice services, everything else. Hybrid is kind of our choice to say you want to run link, but you're not sure that you're going to be able to maintain the instant messaging and conferencing capability and run that all on-prem and have worldwide coverage essentially for that, but you still want voice, right? And you want your existing carrier relationships, you want the ability to integrate with your PBX or PSTN infrastructure that you have today. So hybrid says, I get cloud, my users are going to be instant messaging and conferencing workloads based in the cloud, but anything that happens voice-wise, the cloud is going to redirect that signaling back to my local on-premises infrastructure, where I then can talk to my local telecommunications provider, my local IP PBX, for example, or anything else. And so hybrid is saying, of the three capabilities of link, instant messaging, conferencing, and voice, we're going to move two to the cloud, but the third one will keep on-prem. And that's hybrid voice. Please don't confuse that with the concept of split domain, right? So split domain says I have some instant messaging, conferencing, and voice users on-prem, and I have some instant messaging and conferencing users in the cloud. So we also have the capability with 2013 to say, you know, I'll just say half and half or subsets on each. Primary goal there is what we found is even though there's been demand for this, we want to be able to run things in the cloud, we've seen a lot more organizations say, I want to pilot it first. And so I want to move a subset of my users or a subsidiary over here that I'm spinning up or this acquisition I want to enable, I want them in the cloud, but I've already got infrastructure that I've bought and purchased today. So this concept of split domain enables you to split your organization and have some running on link on-prem, some running on link in the cloud. So split domain allows you to split inside of a workload. Link hybrid voice allows you to say the whole voice workload runs on-prem. Instant messaging and conferencing is a cloud. So it's Yes. So once I think where you're going is once you deploy hybrid voice, you've deployed Link on-prem. And so once you deployed Link on-prem, Why would you move some of the users off to the cloud for instant messaging and presence? We don't know. we would say, you tell us. What we're trying to do is give you Legos, right? And have the Legos be as flexible, right, as can be. Because we don't know at the end of the day which specific... if we came with like a one-size-fits-all, it's going to fit a subset of the market, right? And so the goal is to enable it for as many scenarios as possible with the... turn off the alarm. Lost my train of thought with the beeps. Enable, so let's see, there was hybrid. I had a good train of thought that was coming out too. That train of thought just got wiped out with the timer. Yeah, Legos. Oh, so the goal is, right, to say, here's some flexibility and choice. Oh, I know where I was going. So we have the concept of split domain, some on-prem, some in the cloud. Now we have the concept of moving whole workloads, instant messaging and conferencing, to the cloud. What we've found around voice is we can't take the whole voice infrastructure, which is your carrier relationships and your IP PBX, and move it to a remote data center. So if you wanted to do voice all in, we just don't have a story today without signing up in every country to be a telecommunications provider. And so for organizations that say, I want to be as much cloud as possible, Link Hybrid says you can move instant messaging and conferencing because you think cloud is the future and the way to go, but you're still able to do voice using your existing infrastructure because Microsoft is unable due to the legal requirements around that. So I think that's more the framework of why we've enabled the Link Voice Hybrid scenario. Yes. Yes. Yep. So question, yep. Do you have more to that, or is it call back, or is there more? Sorry, I kind of cut you off. Yep. So question is, so response groups give you basic automatic call distribution. You can call in, you know, 1 through 5, for example, or, you know, you say accounting the numbers, it's going to route you to different groupings. You might have sub-options underneath that. Eventually, it's going to get you to an agent. We have holidays and working hours. Beyond that, we don't really have anything in response groups. Our strategy around call centers is that's a partner play on top of Link. So we've got a handful of partners who have developed full contact center solutions. We've also got a handful of partners that have developed just reporting solutions that sit on top of response groups. We find the specific scenario of callback is one you'd have to go to a full contact center solution for. What we do see is customers that say, hey, response groups by themselves work for 60% of my call center requirements, essentially, but I don't have any reporting out of the box inside of Link for, you know, average time on hold, agent utilization, things like that. So you can buy some just reporting capabilities that will look at the data inside of Link and give you that reporting functionality for it, or you can step up and get an entire contact center solution that integrates or sits on top of Link as well. Our initial plan, like we said, was to have response groups really kind of just this niche scenario. We have been taken by surprise a bit with the uptick in that, and so there's been some more investment. You see the response group manager portion here. To be determined how much that will grow or change over time. Our official story and strategy is contact centers is a niche market that requires a lot of vertical expertise, and kind of a all-in-one platform is not really the best fit for that. You really need to engage a specialty partner around contact centers or call centers. Yes? Implement Cisco, I missed... Cookie Link. So question is, how much have we seen the couple products, Cookie Mock and Cookie Link? I'll also add to that, there's one from Avaya called Ace. I don't know if you have seen it all yet. So Link itself is not just a telecommunications and communications platform, it's also a development platform. So we publish the APIs that we use to write the clients, and we publish a set of APIs that you can use to write server-side applications that kind of interact with or modify with Link as well. Cookie Mock and Cookie Link are two options provided by Cisco, which sit on top of the Link client. So the Link client is used for instant messaging and presence, and then they wrote an application that handles voice, video, conferencing, et cetera, the other capabilities. Avaya has done the same thing with something called ACE. It sounds very logical, right? I've already bought or I have invested with a Cisco or an Avaya platform around conferencing or voice, for example, and I've got Link that I've deployed for, maybe I had OCS or Link for instant messaging and presence, and I want to integrate them together. So I can add this little software layer on top of the client, and now, boom, one client gives me IM, but I have some other little buttons on there that gives me video and voice. What we found is that the user experience is suboptimal. So we've done a lot of work in Link around saying, I have an instant message with a person. I want to turn that to a call or to a conference or to something else. And it's a click, right? There's another tab there that allows you to do it. We'll spend some time demoing that tomorrow morning. If you saw, I was looking for Paul. If you saw Paul's session, he showed a little bit of that Thursday morning. When you use the plugins, that experience changes. First of all, you're required to kind of buy two back-end products essentially do the same thing. Second one is that you have a different look and feel for that conferencing, sharing, voice capability that you had in the other. So at the end of the day, I would say ask the other vendors for their reference deployments. I can say from our side we see very little. We see a lot of it come up in the sales cycle, but we see very little come through on the actual deployment side. And like I said, turns out better than it is. Now, if those vendors continue to iterate that and make that process more seamless, I would expect to see more on the deployment side, but that's usually where we see the bake-off fail. Questions? All right, I think it's giveaway time again. I was trying last time for a random number generator. I think we're starting to pick some of the same numbers. And this is probably also this. Have anybody went to the security sessions? I don't know if they're covering that in this one. I just read a really interesting article as to why passwords are kind of failing, right? It all comes down to it's very difficult to come up with a truly random number. And so even the random number generators that are using hashes and algorithms, for example, have some weaknesses, and if those weaknesses can be exploited. And I noticed the same thing with Lohit trying to come up with the random numbers for the processes here. So. And let's try a web-based random number generator. Hopefully I can find one that restricts us. Oh, Excel, there is a random number generator in Excel. Thank you. I forgot about that formula. Is it random? Anyone know what it is? Rand between, there we go. Rand between, we'll say 0 to 3,000. Uh-oh. And between 0, 3,000. What's and between? Can you guys see what I'm, let's see. I'll move it over so you can see what I'm typing here. Oh, now I can't read it. And between. Got a random. I'm sure you do. It is truly random, right? Just happens to be randomly yours. Rand between equals rand between. I need some help on that one. Help on this error. All right, while you're playing with that one, let's see. Why? I don't have. Oh, I didn't. That's why. I don't have internet.